Thus absorbed and consented in this unutterable delight, I had not attended to the sweet author of it, being thoroughly wet and in danger of catching cold, when, in good time, the landlady, whom the appearance of my equipage, which, by the by, Charles knew nothing of, had gained me an interest in for me and mine, interrupted us by bringing in a decent shift of linen and clothes, which now, somewhat recovered into a calmer composure by the coming in of a third person, I pressed him to take the benefit of, with a tender concern and anxiety that made me tremble for his health. He was soon dressed in these temporary clothes, which neither fitted him nor became the light my passion placed him in. Yet as I eyed him more in detail, I could not but observe the even favourable alteration which the time of his absence had produced in his person. There were still the requisite lineaments, still the same vivid vermilion and bloom reigning in his face, but now the roses were more fully blown. The tan of his travels, and a beard somewhat more distinguishable, had, at the expense of no more delicacy than what he could well spare, given it an air of becoming manliness and maturity, that symmetrized nobly with that air of distinction and empire with which nature had stamped it, in a rare mixture with the sweetness of it. Still nothing had he lost of that smooth plumpness of flesh, which, glowing with freshness, blooms florid to the eye and delicious to the touch. Then his shoulders were grown more square, his shape more formed, more portly, but still free and airy. In short, his figure showed riper, greater, and perfecter to the experienced eye than in his tender youth, and now he was not much more than 22. In this interval, however, I picked out of the broken, often pleasingly interrupted account of himself that he was, at that instant, actually on his road to London, in a not very paramount plight or condition, having been wrecked on the Irish coast, for which he had prematurely embarked, and lost the little all he had brought with him from the South Seas, so that he had not, till after great shifts and hardships, in the company of his fellow traveller, the captain, got so far on his journey. That so it was, having heard of his father's death and circumstances, he had now the world to begin again on a new account. A situation which he assured me, in a vein of sincerity that, flowing from his heart, penetrated mine, gave him to far the pain, than that he had it not in his power to make me as happy as he could wish. My fortune, you will please to observe, I had not entered upon any overture of, reserving to feast myself for the surprise of it to him in calmer instants. Charles, however, thus returned to my longing arms, tender, faithful, and in health, was already a blessing too mighty for my conception. But Charles in distress, Charles reduced and broken down to his naked personal merit, was such a circumstance in favour of the sentiments I had for him as exceeded my utmost desires. And accordingly I seemed so visibly charmed, so out of time and measure pleased at his mention of his ruined fortune, that he could account for it no way, but that the joy of seeing him again had swallowed up every other sense or concern. And when I opened the state of my fortune to him, I begged of him his acceptance of it on his own terms. I should appear to you perhaps too partial to my passion, were I to attempt the doing his delicacy justice. I shall content myself then with assuring you that after his flatly refusing the unreserved, unconditional donation that I long persecuted him in vain to accept, it was at length, in obedience to his serious commands, that I yielded my consent to waive the remonstrance I did not fail of making strongly to him against his degrading himself, and incurring the reflection, however unjust, of having, for respects of fortune, bartered his honour for infamy and prostitution, in making one his wife, who thought herself too much honoured in being but his mistress. The plea of love, then overruling all objections, Charles, entirely won with the merit of my sentiments for him, which he could not but read the sincerity of in a heart ever open to him, obliged me to receive his hand, by which means I was in pass, among other innumerable blessings, to bestow a legal parentage on those fine children you have seen by this happiest of matches. Thus, at length, I got snug into port, where, in the bosom of virtue, I gathered the only uncorrupt sweets, where, looking back on the course of vice I had run, and comparing its infamous blandishments with the infinitely superior joys of innocence, I could not help pitying, even in point of taste, those who, immersed in gross sensuality, are insensible to the so delicate charms of virtue, than which even pleasure has not a greater friend, nor than vice a greater enemy. Thus temperance makes men lords over those pleasures that intemperance enslaves them to. The one, parent of health, vigour, fertility, cheerfulness, and every other desirable good of life. The other, of diseases, debility, barrenness, self-loathing, with only every evil incident to human nature. If you do me then justice, you will esteem me perfectly consistent in the incense I burn to virtue. If I have painted vice in all its gayest colours, if I have decked it with flowers, it has been solely in order to make the worthier, the solemner sacrifice of it to virtue. You know my husband. You know his estate, his worth, and good sense. Can you, will you pronounce it ill-meant, at least of him, when, anxious for his son's morals, with a view to form him to virtue and inspire him with a fixed, a rational contempt for vice, he condescended to be his master of the ceremonies, and led him by the hand through the most noted bawdy houses in town, where he took care he should be familiarised with all those scenes of debauchery, so fit to nauseate a good taste? The experiment, you will cry, is dangerous. True, on a fool, but are fools worth so much attention? I shall see you soon. And in the meantime, think candidly of me. And believe me ever, madam, your greatly obliged and very humble servant, Francis Hill.